Hey, everybody, we got some exciting news. There's a brand new podcast coming from Nickelodeon that you can check out. Listen Out Loud, the Loud House podcast. That's right. Lincoln Loud and his sisters are starting their own podcast, and we're so excited to have them. So be sure to look out for Listen Out Loud coming soon from Nickelodeon.
Nick, 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 Nick.
Nickelodeon!
From Nickelodeon Animation in Burbank, California, this is the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. Hi, welcome to the Nickelodeon Animation Podcast. I'm Hector Navarro, and we've got a fantastic episode for you today. Welcome to the Wayne is the brand new Nickelodeon animated show about three kids exploring their mysterious, possibly haunted apartment complex called The Wayne. And we have got the creator, co-executive producer, as well as one of the stars of the show himself with us today. I am so happy to be able to introduce to you guys Mr. Billy Lopez. Want to ask so many questions about Welcome to the Wayne, Billy. I want to ask so much stuff about it. But what is it like going from the world of preschool shows, Wonder Pets, Third and Bird, Peg Plus Cat, to then go over into not a preschool show? What is it like for you as a writer, creator, all of that?
It's a really good question. I guess there's probably some overlap. Obviously, a lot of the brilliant people we've hired to work on the show are longtime friends and colleagues from the preschool world. You know, it's and the other funny thing about it for me was that I worked in preschool for, you know, 7 or 8 years, and finally I'm now working on a 6 to 11 show, and I feel like I finally graduated to grade school or something like that. You know, it's taken me that long. But yeah, the difference is, I mean, you know, it's a good question. Like, the sensibilities are obviously different, and the scope of the audience, the things that they can process and understand, or even partially process and understand, are just so much wider. So you get to use your imagination in different ways.
Yeah.
And for me, the best thing about this age group is the humor that you're allowed to branch off into. You can just get a lot more in-depth and convoluted sometimes with the jokes, and have them go rapid fire, and you know that as long as your audience is getting, you know, a good 60-70% of it, then it's okay. So it's, yeah.
And what I love about the humor in Welcome to the Wayne, which, by the way, it's so funny.
Oh,
it's so, so funny. What I love about it is, I mean, I'm an adult and I'm watching the show, but this show does not talk down to kids in terms of humor, which I love.
Yeah, I my favorite Nick show growing up was Ren and Stimpy, which had a huge impact on me, and that was my impression of it as well. I mean, I guess I was a little older when that came out, but I was sort of like, wow, this is for kids, but it's not. It's for everybody. It's for the ages. Not to say that we are, but but I love that quality in kids shows for sure. One of the challenging things about writing the show is that, you know, we have a lot of plot to cover, and personal character development to cover, and then we try to get jokes in at just about every line. So you're sort of vacillating. One is vacillating constantly between these different modes in writing, and even if not every line you're is making you laugh or is intended to be funny, there's still sort of a wryness that imbues the whole thing, and a kind of self-awareness that sort of, you know, pervades all three of all those different modes of writing. So so it's sort of tricky, but getting things to kind of blend together like that has been a fun challenge.
It's around 2005. You and your brother Bobby, you co-composed 2 episodes of Wonder Pets on Nick Jr. How did that opportunity come about?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was, I was living at home at the time. I was out of college going to grad school, trying to get an MFA in creative writing. And I was doing that because I really didn't have much of an idea of what I wanted to do. I mean, I knew I wanted to be a writer, but I wasn't making anything happen. And so I thought, you know, I'll go back to school. That can't hurt. And in the middle of all that, my brother Bobby, who's a brilliant composer and writer, got contacted by Little Airplane, which is the production company that made The Wonder Pets, and they asked him. He just had his first musical come out called Avenue Q, so they were reaching out to Broadway composers to get them. That was the style of the show. They had a lot of wonderful luminaries on there, and Bobby, being he's 7 years older than I am, he's basically the best older brother in the world, and he said, "Well, I'll do it if I can do it with my little brother," and they said, "Sure." So that's I got brothered in, I got grandfathered in a little bit, and I think that's sometimes how these things can happen if you're lucky. And I write music. I'm not a composer, I wouldn't say. I don't have facility with the piano or with writing and reading music. I can do it a little bit. I'm more of a songwriter, so my contributions to that process were on the minimal side, but it did give me a nice chance to get to meet a lot of the wonderful people at Little Airplane when we came in to do our meetings, and I got a good feel for the place. And then eventually, down the line, there was talk of a writer's workshop that they were hosting, where you'd come in and they'd give you a log line, which is just a synopsis for an episode, and send you home, and you were to write the treatment and then the episode itself. And I managed to finagle my way into that, and then off the strength of that, I was hired to be the script coordinator for the company.
And so how do you go from script coordinator to becoming head writer on some of these shows?
I was, it's funny because if you know me at all, you know that any job title with the word coordinator in it is not a good fit, probably. This was my first job, too, basically my only job. I was very uncoordinated. I remember among the duties I had to do were, we recorded, they had a vocal booth and a whole orchestra room. They still do to record the live Wonder Pets orchestra and all the voices. They would have the three girls who played Linny Tuck and Ming Ming, who are the little animal characters in the show. They'd all come in and stand in the booth together and do their stuff. So one of the things I would have to do is take the script sides, the individual pages, and highlight the names of the characters for each of the actors, and then staple the pages to these old pieces of cardboard backing that had tons and tons of staples in them from being reused over and over again, and do this in a mad rush and half an hour before the girls showed up to record. And so I would always end up stapling my thumb and getting some blood on the cardboard or something like that. They might still be there, but that was how I
replaced the cardboard. That's horrifying, Billy. That's horrifying.
I think it's wonder. It's a very green, green thing to do. But those were some of the script coordinator duties. But luckily, I think they were insightful enough to know that that wasn't what they were hiring me for. So I also was given...
Yeah, they were like, "Billy, we don't want you to keep bleeding all over the script. We need to put you in another position."
They wanted me to put my blood into the script, I think, just not in literally.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of writing. I was being given lots of scripts to either tweak or to write on my own, and doing my best to really take advantage of those opportunities. And it was a lot of fun. I met a lot of wonderful people and learned so much. There was another show coming up called Third and Bird that was going to be on CBeebies and eventually Disney Junior. Little Airplane asked me to be the head writer on that show, and I actually initially turned them down because I didn't think I was ready, which is probably the smartest move.
Wonder Pets, Wonder Pets, run!
When did you know as a kid that you wanted to be a writer? When did you make that decision? Or was that a decision that came later in life?
It was when I was a kid. It was very early on. I don't remember what age specifically, but it was somewhere in the four to six realm. I think it was, for a while, it was between marine biologist and something to do with writing. And then I realized, marine biology has to do with science, and I probably shouldn't go near that. I'm not a quantitative person, unfortunately.
Have you always been musically inclined? As you were a kid, were you also doing music at the same
time? Yes, yeah. I wanted to play piano since I was three or four, because I grew up with my brother playing piano. So I took lessons until I was 13. Then I switched to guitar in that angsty phase, and that was really that became my instrument. I just wanted to form a band with some friends, so we all decided to learn the instruments we needed, and they were nice enough to let me have the guitar instead of the drums or the bass, and it was great. I've played it ever since. I'm not the most technically proficient player, but what I did do in high school, I could never put it down in high school. I was always playing guitar and writing songs, and they're all unlistenable, but there were hundreds of them, and then hundreds of other riffs. You know, I have all these old tapes that say Billy riffs, you know, 11 1993 or whatever, and I'm never going to be able to listen to them because I don't have a tape player. But I've loved making music. I'm kind of terrible when it comes to doing that in a disciplined way, like sitting down and learning a piece on piano and being able to perform it. But as far as just letting it out creatively, that's always been something fun for me.
All right, Billy, run through some of your early band names that you came up with. I know you got a bunch of them.
Oh,
and
my
they're
God.
Probably real good. Let's hear them.
I'm the worst. I seem in my bands, I always get my way as far as the band name, which is terrible because they're always the worst band. I'll tell you, my first band, the band I was just talking about when we were in seventh grade, my friends and I wanted to form a punk band. And, you know, I'm sure we had tons of names. And the one we ended up going with was unpronounceable. It was Kazage, K-Z-A-G-E, exclamation point. So nobody knew how to say that. And our first and I think...
Kazage.
Now it's been immortalized.
You're working in preschool world. How do you go from that to getting an opportunity to compose a song for Phineas and Ferb? That's pretty cool. How did that happen?
That is really cool. This is another thing I have to give my brother full credit for. He found this little show when he was looking for shows for his older daughter to watch called Phineas and Ferb, and he pointed it out to me, and I loved it as well. And then I believe he reached out to the creators, Swampy Marsh and Dan Povenmire, and they became friends, and I ended up meeting them at one point, and we were all having a good time making up an idea for a musical about Moby Dick, which was going to be called Dick, I believe. And it just sort of blossomed from there. I became good friends with Swampy and Dan, and I was actually out in L.A. Guest writing on South Park and kind of having a hard time. I wasn't really, you know, I didn't feel like I was contributing anything. And then out of nowhere, Swampy Marsh called me up and said, hey, do you want to come over and write a song? And I said, yes. So I went over and we had a great time. We wrote this sort of bluesy rock song for one of their episodes. And it actually sort of rejuvenated the trip for me. I was really down in the dumps about failing in the South Park writer's room. And then I had this great experience on Phineas and Ferb, and it gave me a little more confidence. So,
well, yeah. Speaking of South Park, I mean, in the world of animation, I don't think that there are many people who can point to their IMDb and go, look at how different this is. I've got Wonder Pets, Peg Plus Cat on this end, and South Park on this. You know what I mean? That's pretty incredible. That's great.
And then when you put those together, you hopefully get Welcome to the Wayne.
So you mentioned that that was something that your brother got you into, because your brother Bobby co-created Book of Mormon, is that correct?
He sure did, yeah. He co-created
he sure
it and wrote it with... I know, I'm just always... whenever I hear that Bobby did stuff, I'm just like, oh my God, what did he do? Incredible. He basically ran into Matt and Trey at another performance of Avenue Q, and they started talking, and Bobby and his then partner had wanted to do a show about the Book of Mormon, and I think Matt and Trey had as well. So they started then and there, and they all got along really great. You know, it was fun to get over there and watching those guys work, the South Park guys in the writing room, is really inspiring and cool and intimidating, because they have their thing down really well and wonderfully funny. So yeah.
Can you get into a little bit of why it was kind of a difficult experience to come over and work on South Park?
Oh, sure. You know, I'm just sort of a timid personality, you know, especially with people I admire, and especially famous people whom I... For me, it's not, I don't really care that much about fame, but it still has that effect on me when I'm starstruck, and I, you know. So here I am with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, and it was tough for me to kind of relax and get into it, and they were wonderful and fantastic, but they had a show to make, so I wasn't expecting them to try to like make me comfortable or anything. Like, they had to do their thing, so I just I you know I live listened for the most part and piped up when I could. But what's funny is that working on Welcome to the Wayne now, we've had some young staffers in the writing room. We've had, you know, a script coordinator. And I see just some of those same nerves, you know, working on that. You know, when they're, you can tell they want to say something, but they're not sure, and you're not sure it's going to play in the room or whatever. So it's just, it's funny. I don't think it's terribly uncommon. But I remember on the South Park episode, I was happy in the end because I think I got one good joke in, and I suggested a plot, a major plot beat that got in or something like that. So.
Welcome to the Wayne. How long has the idea for the show been gestating in your brain? Where did the idea come from? Why did you want to make this show?
There's a couple of answers to the first question, how long it's been gestating. Well, the simplest answer would be I received a call from my friend and colleague Heather Tillert, who was working at Nickelodeon. This is in 2012, and she was working on the digital side of things, and she said, we have this new digital shorts coming up. We'd love to have you come in and pitch, and they were asking lots of people to come in and pitch ideas. So I thought, I'd pitched, you know, to Nick Jr. before and gotten far enough, but then always ended up getting rejected. So I immediately thought, well, this isn't going anywhere, but I'll go in and show them some ideas and at least get to meet some people, and that might help. And I went in and had, you know, 10 or 15 ideas, and I pitched them all. And this is the one that they were drawn to. But as far as how long it's been gestating, I think it's kind of a much longer process than that. I think because it comes from the idea comes from more or less going trick-or-treating in our apartment complex when I was a little boy, which was great because, you know, they would have lists in the lobby of all the various apartments that were signed up, and you'd basically go up to the penthouse with your friends and start tearing your way down through the stairwells, banging on doors, kicking doors, doing stuff you shouldn't be doing, but really just like, it was like, what is that movie where they let everybody kill each other legally for 2 hours every year or something like that? It was like that.
The Purge.
Exactly, yeah.
Describing your Halloween experience as like The Purge.
The Purge, except I guess it would be The Binge in the case of Halloween.
You start at the penthouse because you knew like, oh, we got to start at the penthouse because that's the big candy. Those people up there, they're gonna have full-size candy bars.
Yeah, I think it was more just like we were gonna hit everything. But I think the penthouses in particular the ceilings of the hallways were always a little taller, and they always seemed a little spookier. So I don't think we'd got anything special from the penthouse.
But so yeah. Already as a kid, you're imagining, oh, the people that live in this apartment complex are vampires, and they're Wayne phenomena. Like you're already imagining that stuff as a kid.
You know, I don't know if I was at that age, but what I think what happened was, you know, there was the Halloween thing, and then when I was 10, we moved to another apartment building, and that was around when I had started reading a lot of Stephen King, and I think in particular The Shining was making a big impression on me, and the apartment building that we lived in at the time was a nice place, but it was the tenants were largely geriatric, and there were often like ambulances and stretchers outside in the driveway when I'd get home, and just a lot of kind of, you know, the elderly are treasures, but there a lot of these creepy treasures were walking around the lobby and sitting there, and so it was a little spooky. So, you know, with the imagery of the Overlook Hotel and you know, seeing spooky twins at the other end of a corridor or whatever creeping around in my mind, I'd come home, and we lived on the second floor, so I just had to walk up one flight of stairs to get there. But it was always like, if my imagination was running, then I would just be freaked out, like, you know, just looking around every corner before I got there. I was just sure something was going to leap out at me.
I'll bet you were avoiding the elevator because you're like, I think a bunch of blood's about to just pour out of there.
Yeah, I think so.
Caroline, you just helped a vampire get away with your own brother and my best friend.
Slow down, Ansie. You're jumping to conclusions.
But he's a vampire! What other conclusions are there to draw?
Let's look at the facts, shall we? Vampires are evil.
Evil?
They suck blood.
The suckage?
They absolutely terrorize the Romanian peasantry.
The Roma are the peasant... Heard that, yep.
That's all hearsay and stereotypes. I'd expect this from you, Wendell. But, Ansi, this is not how Team Timbers operates.
So you said, Billy, that this was the pitch that they were really drawn to. Can you tell us a little bit about the pitch?
You know, it started out as a different... And this is something I didn't remember until I looked back at my notes, you know, a couple weeks ago. And it was a different idea at first. It was always the building, and it was always Ollie and Ansi. But and they were always going on adventures. But it was... I think I was pitching it at first as a show where it was more about these kids' lives and the things that they did. So there would be more of a magazine-style show. So you'd have them playing in one scene, and it would be the world of their toys and how they play with their toys. And then another scene would be a show that they watched, and you just, you know, you'd animate that show. And then whatever they – but they'd get into to different adventures in their crazy building. And discussing – that appealed to them. And I thought they were interested in kind of a magazine format. But as the conversations continued, they were biting more – on the mystery stuff that I was throwing at them and the intrigue. So that's where it ended up going pretty quickly, like right away. And eventually I wrote a script, just a sort of proof of concept script, which I need to find somewhere. It probably bears no resemblance to the show anymore, but sent that to them, and I think that helped them see what I was seeing in my head for it.
You mentioned Stephen King.
Yes.
You mentioned Ren and Stimpy.
Yes.
You know, I definitely get a Stranger Things vibe when I watch Welcome to the Wayne. I definitely get a Goonies vibe. I love
the Goonies
as a kid so much. My favorite character, Data. So as soon as I saw Sarah Lyon, I'm like, that's my favorite character. She's it. She's the best. Tell us a little bit about some of these influences and some of the characters too.
The Goonies for me, it's funny, just to go on a little tangent. That stands to me as proof that you can love the hell out of something as a kid and not know one thing about what it's about. Because I watched The Goonies so many times, and I could never follow. I mean, I noticed that I was losing the thread of the story, but I didn't care. You know, I knew it was going to wrap up eventually, and all of these disparate elements. As far as, it's just an interesting thing as far as storytelling. You know, we put a really high premium on it, and there's a lot of, in the zeitgeist now, and people talk, I think it's because of what you're saying about television, you know, coming into this new golden age right now. People's, at least the people I talk to, everybody's vocabulary for talking about storytelling and TV shows, and everybody's saying this had second act problems or whatever. They didn't tighten up the arc, and like, so, and nobody was talking that way 10 years ago, as far as I remember. I never grew up having those kinds of discussions about TV, but now everybody knows more about TV than I do. So it's crazy. But these shows with kids doing big adult stuff is always it's just such a great theme you can always go back to, because kids always they think responsibility is sexy. They think it's amazing. Like, you know, going to work, everything they play is a job of some kind. And that stuff all sounds great and serious when you're a kid and you feel like you have nothing to do but play, and you're answerable to everybody who's older than you. But then when you get older, you realize that none of it's fun. But it's still just a wonderful thing to be able to write about. A group of kids who do have a responsibility, and they need to take it seriously and kind of go for broke.
An apiary hood, tap shoes. Am I some kind of tap dancing beekeeping whaler?
Mystery solved. Team Timbers does it again.
No, there's something more to this guy. Something important.
More important than raising bees? Perhaps inside of whales?
Wild's tap dancing.
Did you say whilst?
We've got to get to the bottom of this. We know something big is coming to the Wayne, and this guy might be a key part of it. Gentlemen, this guy, it's mission time.
In case people aren't aware, Billy, describe exactly what the Wayne is.
Yes, of course. Yeah, so the show is about, these kids, our main characters, and the building that they live in, which is called the Wayne. I don't know to what degree that's sometimes when I tell people the title and they say, what is that? I say, it's a building. And they say, what do you mean it's a building? Not everybody knows that buildings sometimes have names, I guess. So it's a
little
strange.
Yeah. but
yes, the name of the building is the Wayne. And it's basically one of these storied, you know, New York places that has, you know, that people whisper about, like the Dakota or the San Remo, the things, you know, in those cases, it's celebrity and politician stories and gossip from years ago and, you know, John Lennon and all that. But you know, and I think there's some of that, you know, to be explored in this show, too. But for us, it's about these things called WP or Wayne phenomena, which are the creatures and the strange occurrences that can only happen at the Wayne. And these Wayne phenomena, these WP, are what our main characters are focused on. Basically, they catalog them, they study them, but largely what they're trying to do is protect the people who live at the Wayne and also protect the WP, the creatures. There are complications when the two get together. So the kids see it as their unique responsibility to keep the peace of the building, and furthermore to find out what's at the root of all of this. What's causing the building to be this way? What's the story?
Tell me a little bit about Ansi Molina. He's like the sort of entry point character, audience surrogate,
yes,
in a way. How did the characterization, the personality of Ansi sort of develop?
He's been a bit of a mystery for us for a while. We finally know Ansi pretty well. But he, you know, initially, in the initial development of the short series, of the original digital series that we did, Ansi was basically Ollie's foil. He's the main character in that he's the audience surrogate. But as far as his personality, I had a few details down. Like he was a bit of a hypochondriac. He's very fussy. He likes things just so, and he's very, you know, intellectual and fastidious. But other than that, I just wanted a straight man for Ollie to sort of fall in love with and play off of, and have their opposite tendencies, you know, hopefully spark something. So, you know, as we continue to develop the show in a long form series, one of the big questions we wanted to, you know, find out about Ansi was well, what's he about in other ways? And you know, we discovered that he's got a real dashing, adventuresome heroism to him. You know, he thrives off of the stuff that Ollie throws at him, even though he would be inclined, you know, in other circumstances to run the other direction. Something about the Wayne and something about Ollie and all of this stuff brings out the adventurous side in Ansi.
Hey, Ansi! Welcome to the Wayne!
Thanks, George.
You've been here, what, a couple weeks now? How are you settling in?
Honestly, I don't know if I belong at the Wayne.
What? The atmosphere a little sophisticated?
No, it's all the weird stuff here.
So how did the character of Saraline kind of develop, other Timber's sibling?
Yes, she has developed a bit. You know, I always thought of her as a pretty integral part of the show, but one of the changes that we've made in bringing the show from a digital series to a long form on cable is bringing Saraline to the fore a little bit more, which she definitely deserves. They, you know, originally it was a duo, you know, it was Ansi and Ollie, but now it really is the three of them, and they call themselves Team Timbers.
How did you guys make that decision?
I think it was kind of natural. I mean, I wanted to. I always envisioned Saraline as the leader of their little three person kid operation. You know,
she clearly is. She's the mastermind.
Exactly. She's the mastermind. She's got the maturity. She's got the, you know, her eye on the ball at all times, and she can call a play like a quarterback and all this. One of the things we wanted to do with her is to make sure that she developed past just being a dictator and somebody who sort of slaps her older brother around. And we really decided to give her this, you know, this other side. It's a little obvious sounding, but the other side is that she's a 7-year-old girl and has questions about life and doesn't know lots of things and is afraid. And one of her big issues in season one is making friends. She's good with machines and logic, but not the logic of people all the time.
Ally, give me a hand here.
What's this?
It's a forgetterator.
A forgetterator? What's it do?
It wipes the last 30 minutes from your memory, which is how I'm able to tolerate being your sister.
Ooh, what's this?
It's a forgetterator.
Is that Mr. Majestic? He lives!
Billy, you voice one of the main characters, Ollie Timbers.
I do.
The John Candy to Ansi's Steve Martin from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles,
very nice,
right?
Very nice.
I love Ollie.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Such a great character.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's Ollie. There he is. did you just know, like, I'm going to voice Ollie? Like, it's going to be me because that's what I want to do? Or was it other people going, I think you should just voice Ollie, man. We can't find anybody to voice. How did you land as the voice of Ollie?
You know, I really wish it were that second thing you said. But no, it's actually a much more desperate story. There's a couple of reasons. The version I'll go with is basically, when I write a script, I like recording them sometimes to get a sense of the time, how long. Because for me, script pages never tell you the length of anything. They're no indication whatsoever. So I record it and time it out. And when I was pitching them one of the episodes, I brought in the tape recording I'd made and played it as we read along so they could get a sense of the pace and the timing. And James Stevenson, the executive on the project, said, oh, so you're a voice actor too? And I said, no, I'm not. And then I said later, I would like to be Ollie, though. And there was I didn't know if they liked hearing that or didn't like hearing that. But what I do know is I had to audition. I had to audition against incredibly talented actual voice actors who are able to use this thing called the voice to do interesting things. And that concept alone blows my mind. I don't know how to do that. But I did know that I felt the character in my bones. I didn't know if I could get him out right, you know, perfectly right away. But I knew I wanted to. And so I had some surgery done on my vocal cords. No, I'm just kidding. But I did a sort of dirty trick. I was, I had my demo or my audition tape, and there were some other heavy hitters on there, and it was time for the network to decide. So I thought, wait a minute, this is my show. I don't have to play by any rules. I can make up some rules here. So I wrote like a 2-page long monologue for Ollie, where he's talking to the Nickelodeon executives, and basically he's saying, I'm stuck in a dimensional rift. Only you have the dimensional rift has created 4 different Ollie Timbers, and so I spliced together some of the readings that the other guys had done along with mine. And I said to Ollie's plea was, only you can decide who the real Ollie Timbers is, and I know it's me. I know it's, you know. So he's making all these jokes and doing, and it's pretty pathetic sounding, but it worked.
You cheater!
Super,
you cheated,
super cheating.
And it worked brilliantly.
I can't believe that. Thing stole my book.
Hey, pal, welcome home.
Ollie, what did I say about sneaking into my apartment?
You said do it.
He said don't do it.
Saraline, this is breaking and entering.
I resent that. Entering, maybe, but never mind.
You are the creator, co-executive producer of Welcome to the Wayne. As of the time of the recording of this podcast, it hasn't premiered yet.
It's funny.
Which is incredibly exciting. It's really exciting because I wanted to ask you, how do you hope that audiences react to Welcome to the Wayne? What do you want audiences to take away when they watch the show?
I have no idea what they're going to. I want people to, if they like, I want them to like it on their, you know, for their own first. But I hope that they see some of the things that you've been pointing out so kindly. You know, the level of the humor, the pace, the way, as I was saying earlier, the show tries to, but really just sort of has to try to blend, genres, you know, at any given time. But also just basic things. It's really special when I'm learning this now, you know, because we've done some research testing on some of the episodes, and I've gotten to see videos of some kids reacting to it, and it's really special when a child talks about something you made up in a way that you can tell it means something to them. It's kind of amazing. I have a 3-year-old boy and a 7-month-old girl. And, you know, all these years before this, working in preschool, weirdly enough, children, you know, were not always at the forefront of my mind, usually not at all when I was writing this stuff. I was just trying to amuse myself or amuse somebody else or whatever.
Sure.
But now that I have kids, I'm starting to see just, you know, how profoundly amazing that can be. So for me, it's absolutely enough that however many people watch it. Watch the first episode. And, you know, there's a character in the first episode called John Keats. And he's a flying, sort of a flying squid. And every now and then it just dawns on me, like, if this show does well, it'll be really cool that a whole generation of kids will think of John Keats first as a flying squid before they think of the poet. You know, right? that sort of thing is fun for me. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, if it isn't little John Keats here to join your friends. What'd you do with my book? Sell it for krill money? Real nice.
Yeah, that joke was squidgest.
Have you noticed your own sort of creative process changing since you've had kids? Have you seen an actual change in, like, what kind of stories you want to tell and how you approach everything that you're doing on Welcome to the Wayne? Have you seen that change?
I haven't. You know, I'm probably, as I was sort of saying before with preschool, I'm probably just, like, not observant enough about the impact the audience being kids and having my own kids has on my work. I'm sure it has an impact. It must, because I have a brain. But I can't tell you what that impact is. Every now and then, I have the, usually when Mike, blushes or balks at a joke, I sometimes have the presence of mind to think, wait a minute, would I want my own son laughing at the joke that I just said? You know, it's like, it's a rare thing, but every now and then, Charlie and Alice, my kids, do save America from an inappropriate joke.
That's great. That's what they're there for.
They've already accomplished everything they need to.
I am so happy for you. I'm so excited for you.
I cannot wait
for you to see people seeing the show. It's going to be so exciting. I think you're going to have a real good year. Thank you so much, Billy Lopez.
Thank you so much for having me, Hector. I really appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. Our conversation with Billy Lopez. I feel like he just has the biggest heart in the whole world. Huge congrats to Billy on his brand new show, Welcome to the Wayne. If you haven't seen it yet, be sure to check it out. Guys, you're not going to want to miss an episode of the podcast, so please subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at nickanimationpodcast.com for more episodes and tons of bonus content, like some really cool behind-the-scenes goodies from Welcome to the Wayne. Thanks to the awesome crew who puts this podcast together. This podcast is produced by Jonathan Highlander, Dana Vasquez Eberhardt, Tony Gutierrez, Jamie Goss, and Andrew Huebner. Original music by Useful Creatures. This week's episode edited by Jonathan Highlander and Josh Caldwell. Our social media team is Narbe Manassians, Sammy Armiger, and David Watson. Manny Gruhalva and Justin Brinsfield are our engineers. Until next week, thanks for listening and keep watching cartoons.